people think that Aborigines shouldn't interfere with something like the Commonwealth Games. I say that it's about time we let the world know. Let the world know what's going on here.
Gary Foley, on the stump there in 1982, leading protest against the Commonwealth Games. Gary Foley is an activist, a man who spent much of his life, or it seems, arguing, often with some heat, in the cause of his people. I'd call that Aboriginal resistance. He might define it better in a second. Activist, actor, academic. There are several strings to Gary Foley's bow. He's now Dr. Foley, a PhD crowning an academic career. Began with an arts degree in 2002. On Wednesday this week, he'll be lecturing at Melbourne University based on that doctorate, a lecture titled Tangled Up in Black. Gary Foley, welcome.
G'day.
Is that right? Aboriginal resistance?
In a past life.
The past life of an activist?
Yeah, I become disillusioned late in life, possibly a lot more pessimistic than I should be.
Because that work of an activist, that assumes the prospect of, you know, a victory, doesn't it?
Yes, and there will be no victory. There has been no victory.
Explain that to me.
A few years ago, I did a talk at the Festival of Dangerous Ideas in Sydney, and my allegedly dangerous idea or proposition was that in 50 years' time, the genocide will be complete, the assimilation project will have reached its fulfilment, and there will be no Aboriginal people. End of problem.
Still your belief?
Yep. I think that the direction things are going at the moment, where ardent advocates of the old assimilation ideas are now the prominent accepted, admired Aboriginal spokespeople, specifically and namely Noel Pearson, who everybody in white Australia seems to adore and love.
Yet even Noel Pearson in his quarterly essay goes back very much to genocide, to the brutality of the occupation.
Well, if he does, I haven't bothered to read his monthly essay, but if he says that, then it's not before time he started talking like that, but I think it's too late.
And he makes the argument, I don't want to talk about Pearson necessarily, but this is the central argument at the moment, I guess, is around things like constitutional recognition and so on.
Yes, but that, I mean, that's a furphy. It has absolutely zero possibility of being achieved, so therefore, in my mind, it has to be a diversionary tactic to divert people's attention from, you know, some of the more serious issues. The last time we had a constitutional change, a referendum to bring about constitutional change, was in 1967. That came at the end of a 10-year intense campaign by the likes of people, admirable people such as Faith Bandler and many others. Mm-hmm. And it occurred in a period when, as the referendum itself showed, in excess of 90% of the Australian people were strongly supportive of Aboriginal issues and Aboriginal rights. Now, since 1967, we've had significant change. We've had Pauline Hanson. We've had an extremely anti-Aboriginal government, the Howard government. The attitudes of Australians have been indoctrinated into a different position. And the chances of a referendum in support of significant positive change for Aboriginal people today are buckless and none.
Was there a turning point for you, Gary Foley? Was there a moment at which you thought that this can't be won?
I don't know. I believe at the moment that the Hawke government sold us out on land rights was the end of the game. You know, if people got any sort of a memory, he was loudly proclaiming to anyone who would listen that his government was going to deliver national uniform land rights legislation. Now, that great principle stance of Bob Hawke lasted as long as it took for then State Premier of Western Australia and the National President of the ALP, Mr. Brian Burke, to intervene on behalf of the Australian mining industry, and that was the end of land rights. Simple. By the time of the Hawke-Keating government left office somewhat 10 or 12 years later, what did we have? We had this thing called native title, which most Australians somehow or other believe was the delivery of land justice to Aboriginal people, which is a nonsense. We're now back to the language of the 1930s, you know. We've reverted historically back to the era of assimilation. Now, the important thing about the Aboriginal Embassy in 1972, just prior to the advent of the Whitlam government...
You were there.
I was there, and this is one of the things I wrote about in my PhD thesis. When Gough Whitlam came to the Aboriginal Embassy and said to everybody, you know, vote for us in December, and he was challenged by Paul Coe, who jumped up and said, well, hang on a sec, Whitlam, your policy is assimilation. The McMahon government across the road's policy is assimilation. What's the difference? And Whitlam changed the policy of the ALP to be land rights for Aborigines. Now, that was the first time since Federation that any of the two major political parties in this country had a policy towards Aboriginal people that was not assimilation. And that moment represented the end of the assimilation era, until it was resurrected in more recent times by various people.
Gary Foley, I mean, you've had some big wins. The Springboks tour, for example, is a thing that you were instrumental in. You could argue in the sporting ban against South Africa is down to the activity of that time.
Well, I think that the international movement against apartheid in sport played a very significant role in the ultimate ending of the apartheid era in South Africa.
You're involved in Black Power. Why did that not kick on? Why did that anger not take hold?
The self-determination movement was so effective with the Aboriginal Embassy that it brought about a significant backlash on the part of Australian governments. And I'm talking now about the Whitlam government. The Whitlam government was the first of a successive series of Australian governments that realised that they needed to co-opt, if possible, some of the brightest and sharpest minds in Black Australia, and so extensive attempts were made to recruit the most promising young Aboriginal minds into the Australian public service. And, you know, the similar sort of processes in these notions of some people to send Aboriginal kids to wealthy private boarding schools down south.
Your activism, Gary, it goes back to the late 60s, and your thesis charts that experience but brings sort of historical process to it as well. It's been awarded the Chancellor's Prize at Melbourne University, which is a significant thing. Did your understanding of your own life, your own work, change in working on that? Did you come to a new sense of yourself?
Yes and no. I think it was important to document that period because by the time I started doing that era and the ideas of that era and were very much under attack by a new generation of Aboriginal political people. And I think it was important to just put on the record what really that era was all about and what the achievements were and what the aspirations were of that period.
Out of the past into the present, you say you're pessimistic, but to be an Aboriginal Australian in 2014, that means what? That holds what sort of promise?
Well, it seems to me, and a lot of people who I talk to around Australia who are my generation, that in most ways the situation for young Aboriginal people is in fact worse. I was also involved in the creation many years ago, 30 years ago or whatever, of the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody. $50 million the government spent on it. The major finding was that the reason so many Aboriginal people then were dying in jail was because there were so many Aboriginal people in jail. In, you know, 30 years ago, Aboriginal people were amongst the most jailed people on the planet Earth.
Now, nothing has changed.
Well, it has changed. It's actually worse today. There are more Aboriginal people in jail today than there were back at the time of the Royal Commission, and there are very specific reasons for this. And the thing that put more Aboriginal people in jail than anything after the Royal Commission was this lunatic idea from the United States of America of mandatory sentencing. You know, now we've got privatised prisons and all sorts of other lunatic ideas. You stick all these things together and you get a sense of why a bloke like me is really pessimistic about the future.
Sorry to hear that.
Well,
Gary Foley, thank you. a lecture if you're in Melbourne this Wednesday night at Melbourne University, Tangled Up in Black.
And it won't be as dark as I'm being today.